Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another special bonus edition of the Paul Ryder Tapes. In this episode, we have the sweetest, funniest, kindest, most interesting, massively successful international DJ, producer and remixer that I've ever met. It's the legend that is the lovely Paul Oakenfold.
What occupies your time the most now in terms of work? Is it DJing? Is it the record?
No, it's making music in here. This is usually where I, when I was working in England, I was in a dark room for 14 hours. Right. I'd start working midday and end up 3 in the morning. One great thing about LA is because the sun shines, I can start work at 11 and finish at 6. I've got some kind of life now, and the sun's shining, and you're doing it here, and all these movies I worked on.
Oh, right.
That's why I ended up living here.
Oh, that's what brought you here in the first place, doing the movies.
Yeah, that movie, Second Next to Elvis, was John Travolta and Halle Berry, and that's what I got asked to do that movie. I came and
Swordfish.
Done that movie.
Yeah. You did Swordfish?
I scored. Wow. And then I got asked to work on Bourne Identity, Tom Cruise movie, Matrix. So I ended up staying. I didn't plan to live here.
Oh, right. So that was after the whole Mondays thing. That was like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And was that like an accident that you fell into the movie thing?
No, I got approached to score a film, that movie. And I didn't know how to score a film. So I'm like, I've got to take this opportunity and try. So I started to do research and ask people, and then I did it, and they had never really used the proper electronic music in film. It was always traditional score. So it became a hit. As the music became a hit, the film was a hit. So suddenly I got asked to do all these films, and they want you here. So then I said to my mum, I don't know, I mean, you know.
Oh, I bet she was upset.
Yeah, well, I left.
Let's be honest, Pills and Thrills really catapulted them into the mainstream. Like, that album really cemented their future, really. So can you remember how it came about that you were involved in that?
No, sorry.
Can you answer?
Yeah, I can. Yeah. Yeah, just joking. It came around... we'd have to take a couple of steps back to get to Pills and Thrills. So the Mondays came up with a tune called Rope for Luck. I got asked to remix Rope for Luck. That's where our relationship started. So I listened to the original It didn't work for DJs, not just myself, but the rhythm was all wrong. And that was the beginning of my relationship with the Mondays, with Gary, the drummer, was rhythm. It didn't work for the dance floor. So when I did Rope for Luck, I'm like, okay, I need to change the drums, I need to make it more melodic, I need the structure needs to change, and that's what I did. And out of that became a record that people started to play, and the word indie dance came about. Because you could finally dance to indie music.
But how were you approached? Like, whose idea was it to bring you in even for Rope for Luck?
So I can't remember that, but I think it was, I'd worked with bands, I think I'd worked on U2, or was it In Excess, or I was remixing a lot of bands. I was DJing in a nightclub called The Future, so I would play The Cure next to Grandmaster Flash and The Furious Five next to Bob Marley. The club was based around when I went to Ibiza and experienced the Balearic sound that it became to be known, which is basically all kinds of great music together. So I would play at this club. Hence why it's called Rope for Luck is the title, but it's called The Future Mix. And I sampled Prince at the end from the movie Batman, which in those days you could get away with samples. I mean, there's an NWA sample in there. There's a lot going on in that track, but it worked really, really well. And it blew up. And as I say, the media then were going, oh, indie dance. Okay, it's indie dance. And then our relationship started to grow. I ended up working on another song called Hallelujah. I then went and done some shows with them in Ibiza and Manchester and London. We would go up to Hacienda. I would DJ sometimes there, and they would come down to London. And the relationship felt natural for both parties. And then London Records acquired Factory, and then it stepped it up a level. It became, the relationship changed in a good way. It became a professional situation. What I mean by that, you're not going to just remix one of them, you're going to go and start from scratch and produce an album. And I was like, that's a big deal for me, because I'd only ever produced my own music. But I had Steve Osborne, who, in his own right, is fantastic. I mean, Steve is a great producer. Mm-hmm. And I was lucky to have Steve working alongside me on some of these remixes later on in my career, because I was doing it on my own, and I was doing it with a guy called Rob Davis. And then Steve brought a lot to the table for myself. So it just all felt a natural progression to get to the point where we would then become their producers.
Do you know who it was who was driving that relationship, though? Was it Tony that had come up with the idea? Was it Nathan? Was it the band? Like, who was the person who, in the first place?
I think, I don't know. That's more of a question for them, because they decide. It's not like I'm going, listen, let me do this, let me do that. It doesn't really work like that. The record company approaches you, or the band, or even the manager, and says, listen, that's how it came about. I don't know their internal talks. I know that when I got involved with Rope for Luck, it changed their sound. Everything about Happy Mondays, from being that jingly jangly band which they were known as, to something that was more focused, something that that generation at that time that were into acid house, taking pills, going for it, were all into, right? It was the change. So that's why they came back to me and said, "Could you do Hallelujah?" And when I'd done Hallelujah, then it led on to the album, because suddenly Happy Mondays were known for this,
right,
not for that.
Right.
And that's when they started to become a lot more popular across the board and the country.
Yeah. Can you remember the first time you met Paul?
I can remember the first time I met the band. I didn't necessarily meet any individual first. I mean, I was in Hacienda and met Bez, you know, and Sean briefly. But I think collectively was when I met the band, and it was like, okay, are we going to do this? Because I had a different way of working to them. And we had to make sure that we're all on the same page here. You know, usually when you record a band, they're all in the same room and they're playing, and then the producers, you know, and yeah, giving them directions and telling them what to do. But I didn't do it like that. I didn't produce the record like that. It was individual moments with the members of the band, talking them through the process of what we'd done when it came to remixing, that now we're going to do from scratch. Because I would get, let's say, Rope for Luck, I would listen to each individual channel and say, keep that, get rid of all that, let me double check that. And then I'd start to add layers. When me and Steve produced the Mondays, it was a blank piece of canvas. There was demos, rough songs, but within that rough song, I always knew there was a diamond somewhere.
Yeah.
And Sean's lyrics were brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, call the cops, you're twisting my melon, man. You know, I'd like to teach the world to sing. You know, these lines spilled over into the club world. The clubs I was playing at that time, people were like, yeah, call the cops. And it wouldn't mean call the cops. It would mean, you know, it's going off, we're having a great time. But that could be my interpretation, and someone else's interpretation was different. So I didn't meet Paul, just Paul. I met the band.
Mm-hmm. What was your impression? Your first impression of them?
That was it. It was like, man, these guys are great. I mean, they. I think because we were all into clubs, maybe they weren't into clubs for the club music, but they were in the Hacienda. Mm-hmm. They were in the clubs. It just, everything about my relationship with Happy Mondays felt natural. It was one of those special moments you don't get often in music. You don't get often, this is going to be a hit. We are creating more than a record. We are creating a movement. You very, very rarely get that. Otherwise, everyone would be making hits. Right?
Did you know?
I knew. I'm so, this isn't me being big-headed, it's just being honest. I was so confident that this was the beginning of something big. I remember I'm playing it on the dance floor, seeing the reaction of the crowd, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sensing this is something new and fresh and different. It was, you know, it was the right time at the right place. And the music, it doesn't happen often. The second Summer of Love in 1988, when everyone was dropping pills, looking at the DJ doing that, was a moment. When I was on tour with U2 playing stadiums, and they've got a DJ DJing before the biggest rock band in the world, that was a moment. You have moments in music, and the key to those moments is to recognise them and to act on them. Because we all have moments in life. And if you don't act on it, you may regret it. Remember, I should have got on that plane and came to LA and tried to see if it worked in LA. And if it didn't, I could have went home. Well, you did it, and it worked. But you did it. You seized the moment. And in music, it's just, you know when the moment's right. You can feel it. And me and the Happy Mondays has always been right.
How amenable were they to you? I mean, effectively, you came in and you...
changed
you
it all.
You changed the vibe completely. How amenable did they, did anybody fight you?
It's a great question, because out of that question have come other situations with bands where they didn't trust me. What's the point of hiring me if you're not going to let me do my job? There's no point, you know. And the Mundies hired me to produce their album, and they let me, even though they come from a different world, they let me do it the way that I needed to do it to make it work. They trusted me, they listened to me, we had conversations. Why do we need to do it like this? Well, let me explain why. But remember, we'd already mixed two songs, and then I'd done Step On, and Step On was huge. So it was always a case of, let's do Step On, and then it was huge. So it was, why wouldn't we all want to go in the studio and make an album? Since then, I've gone on and produced other bands, and I've had that conversation. Well, everything I'm trying to do to make this record work, in respect of you hiring me as a producer, you are stopping. So why hire me? It ain't gonna work unless you let me do what I do. Mm. And the Mundies let me do what I could do to make that record work. I sensed what could work on the dance floor, because it had been proven with Rope for Luck, Hallelujah, U2, Cure, I'd done it. So, you know, why would you hire me unless you wouldn't want me to do what I do? Mm. Doesn't make sense.
Yeah. And the process of recording that album, you said that everybody did everything individually.
Yeah.
And was there any pushback against
that?
No.
The band, I think, as I completely believed in them, that I could get the best results. I think they believed in Steve and I, that we could deliver, you know. And where Steve was stronger than me, I would hand it over to him and he would sit there and work on certain aspects of the record. Where I was stronger than him, I would sit there, for instance, with Gary, and I was like, your rhythm's too loose. Your rhythm needs to be a tighter rhythm that would work not only as a new Happy Monday sound, but it would work on the dance floor and it would be fresh, because drummers at that time were kind of just a bit looser. It was that sound, whatever you want to call it, the Manchester, I don't know, whatever it was called, indie was the word at that time. It wasn't indie dance, it was just indie music.
Yeah.
And it was a different approach, and my approach was, your rhythms have got to be tighter, so everything fits. It's much more melodic, structured, and people can dance to it, but also listen to it. And that was the difference between what the Mundies were before. You couldn't dance to the Mundies.
Right.
It didn't work.
Do you remember a moment in time when you thought, this is going to... Like, was there a moment when you were in a club when something specific happened? Do you remember?
The club hit, for me, was Rope for Luck. I knew it would work on the floor because of what I'd done to it. As I say, it's got hip hop loops all over it. It's a hip hop record with a guitar line and some samples and shum.
Yeah.
What is Rope for Luck? What does Rope for Luck mean? No, I don't know what Rope for Luck means, but the track worked and the whole idea of it came together and worked because of the elements put together. But it's not the strongest chorus.
Oh.
It's not the strongest song.
It's that hook though, isn't it?
It's the elements that come together that made it work. What become the big, big hit when you knew, hang on, we got club records with Hallelujah and Rope for Luck, and they may go in the charts at number 30 or 40, whatever. But when we knew we had a real record and a hit, Step On.
Yeah.
When Step On came, it was like, oh my God, this is a proper international record. This is a hit record with a fresh sound and a different approach and a great bunch of not the best musicians in the world, but who had a vibe and a swagger, with a great vocalist with Roetta, with a character like Bez. It was a moment in musical time that you look back on and go, wow, man, that, what is this? Mm. And the kids wanted to buy into it, and they did. Mm. They bought into the swagger, the look, the soul. Again, it was right time, right place. Mm. And because I was coming from the clubs, because Steve was coming from the rock, because the band was indie, it just worked. Now, you can't even analyse it and go, well, why did it work? Mm. I have my opinion. Sean's going to have a different opinion. Roetta may have a different, I don't know, right? But those opinions all come into the melting pot and made it work. Yeah. So the Mondays when we came to Los Angeles, just around the corner actually, how strange is that?
I know.
So I never thought in a million years I'd be living around the corner from Capitol Records. We went in, we did it, and we nailed it. It was 6 weeks, straight to the point, we were on a real high. Every member of the band, I honestly think they knew that there was something special here.
Right. Do you remember the days?
There was fun. We went out, we partied. There was... me and Steve... Look, I had a... Personally, it was because it kind of fell on my shoulders. I was the producer. So there was a lot of pressure. It's the first album I'd ever produced outside of what I do. It was a rock band or an indie band. It was a Capitol Studios. It was £100,000. And there was a record company here in America that was like watching. You know, you had a lot of eyes on you, and I didn't want to let anyone down. So I would just be so focused on work. I'd be like, you know, Steve and myself would be sitting talking, how can we make it better? What can we do? Can we bring this element in? So we were doing a lot of work. I went out probably a couple of nights in that whole period. Mm. I would sit and analyse the mixes. I would, you know, it's a big moment for me also, because it was all on my shoulders. If it didn't happen, you know, it could come back on me. And it was also a moment for Steve and myself in our careers that we were so confident, or I was so confident, that I knew it was going to happen.
Do you feel that they delivered on their side of
yes.
things?
Yes. I think that they trusted us enough to let us suggest and do things. Listen, it's Happy Monday's record. It's Happy Monday's album. I'm merely a producer. But I think that they trusted us so much that we could push the envelope and say, well, let's try this, let's do that.
Yeah.
So it was a very creative space. And there's nothing better than the world, in my opinion, than to be in a creative space in a job that you love. Whatever that job is,
yeah.
whoever you are, if you're in a creative space, it brings the best out of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that album brought the best of everyone out of them, because I would sit with Sean and I'd be like, lyrics, lyrics, lyrics. What are we talking about? Where are we going? What's happening? Talk to me. Tell me. Go away and think about it. What melodies are going to come? I was like, that. Come on, come on. You really? You think we can't come up with something better than that? Because I was trying to push him to bring the best out of him.
Mm-hmm. And he was responsive to that.
Yeah, very responsive.
And they all showed up on time. It wasn't them going out getting drunk and drugs and getting
We lived in, all lived in apartments together. So there was a bunch of apartments where everyone lived.
Oakwood Apartments in Burbank, I believe.
Oakwood Apartments in Burbank, which I drive by and go, oh, it's changed the name now.
Was it?
Yeah, so we were in these excuse me, we were in these apartments, and we were all together, and when the sessions would end, they would go and do what they would do, and they weren't, as far as I was aware, they weren't out, going out much. We would go out, because going out to clubs is usually where I'm into me, right? Because that's what I do for a living. So I'd know where to go, and I'd be like, right, Friday night, let's all go out. Fuck it, man. Let's go out and get drunk and have a good time, because we put in a great work all week in the studio. And I honestly think that they loved it in the studio, because they sensed it as much as we all did. We were in this moment. So, you know, I suppose they had their moments with one another, like Sean and Paul maybe did. But I wasn't really aware of that.
No.
I was on Nathan's back a bit.
Yeah.
Nathan was the manager. I was like, make sure you keep this in check. I need Sean tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
You know, drugs were going on, of course. You know, no one's going to hide that. Go and do whatever you want to do, but be here at 2 o'clock tomorrow, because we're going to record your guitar line, your piano, your vocals, whatever it was. And it would happen.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah. Tell me about your impressions of Paul. I mean, you've hinted about...
Paul was quiet. Paul was thorough. Paul would turn up and do what he wanted, what he needed to do. Mm-hmm. We could sit with Paul individually and say, change it up a bit, do this, do that, and he would. But Paul was solid. Paul was always a solid member of the band that you spoke to, and what you asked him to do, he would do, and do quicker than other members of the band.
Right.
And that was Paul's role. You've got a room full of characters. It's not easy to manage characters. You know, I live in a world of characters. With all my friends, and just trying to get them on a tour bus to go to a show is, yeah. You know, they're late, they're this, they're stopping off, picking that. It's like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
You know, hence a tour manager. So, as a producer, you'd sometimes look at the manager and go, you know, but the manager was off, you know, as I mentioned briefly, he was off doing his own things.
Mm-hmm.
But Paul was thorough. What I remember, Paul was, none of them were trouble. None of them I had issues with.
Yeah.
I think they all knew that we were on to something that was special. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why they were all on time and turned up.
Yeah. Do you remember DJing at Paul's first wedding?
Yeah.
Not my one. Tell me about that day.
I think I was so intertwined with the Happy Mondays at one point, people thought I was from Manchester.
What, with an accent like that?
I know, until they heard me talk, they were like, I'm not from Manchester, what are you talking about? But, you know, then people thought I was in the band. I've had people, you know, you're part of, no, I'm not part of Happy Mondays. So I'd done a lot with them, you know, and the wedding was just, of course I come and play some music at your wedding, you know what I mean? It's like, we're friends, not a problem.
Yeah.
You know, of course I come to Ibiza and open for you, you know, at the Coup Club, or of course I open for you at Wembley. It was,
you know, it was that moment. Look, I did a bunch of remixes of Stone Roses. I DJed at Spike Island. I was the resident at clubs in Manchester and Hacienda. I did my spell. I mean, I was there when they shot Rope for Luck, the video.
All right.
There was a lot going on with me in Manchester for some reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's... I have interesting thoughts about that, because they've never done another record after the Tina Weymouth album. They haven't done a record.
No.
There's no new music. And Alan McGee, who's their manager, when I saw him, I was like, why didn't he do a new record? Where, you know, and then he goes, they don't want to.
That's not true. I'm sure that's okay. Not saying that.
Well,
no,
maybe Sean.
Sean didn't want to do it. All the band were gagging to do an album, but Sean wanted to do a solo album and wanted the band to put it out as a Happy Mondays album. They all said, no, we're the band, we want to write the music.
Actually, probably I have heard that.
It's true.
Yeah.
Paul talks about it at length in the podcast, like it was one of his biggest bugbears in life was that Sean wouldn't do another album. But he wrote one with somebody, something in LA, and said, right, we're going to put this out, you can have some publishing, but we're putting it out as a Mondays album. And Gaz and Paul and Mark were like, no, we're not doing that, we didn't write it, we don't want to put our name to something that... This is like one of...
Did you hear it?
Yeah, it was all right, but it wasn't a Mondays album. Like, it's...
You
not take the recipe? Take the elements that worked before.
Absolutely.
Like, why...
And the sounds... Right,
yeah.
You know, when you hear that piano line on Step On, or where you hear the guitar line, it's the sounds. You can't just bring in someone, you know.
But you did do another record with them.
So
about eight years later, you went back in the studio when they, after they split up and they reformed again.
So
tell me about that.
We got offered to do their fourth. Our second, right?
Is right. That right? Yeah, that's right.
And of course I wanted to do it. I mean, you know, who wouldn't want it? Coming off of a platinum record, you know, a record that changed culture in terms of bringing dance and indie music together and creating a sound called indie dance that Enemy and Melody Maker always used to say to me, oh, you know, this sound, this indie dance. And so, of course, we wanted to do it. But as I mentioned briefly, there was no demos. It was a recipe. I know enough about music to know when to do something and when not to. And I was like, we can't go to Jamaica. And then drugs were really, really in the mix big time. There's a lot heavier drugs going on. You want us to go to Jamaica and record an album with nothing just to go there, and you know everyone's going to go like that. They weren't getting on, so everyone's going to go their own ways. And then suddenly it's down to Steve and I to go, duh, duh, duh. It didn't feel right for me. And I was the one who put my hand out, and I was like, I ain't doing it. We're going to be in trouble here, Steve. It ain't going to work, and that's when, and as I say, I love them, they're great, I'm a fan, but it didn't feel right, and I'm glad we did do it. And Nathan McGough was like, you made the biggest fucking mistake of your career, da 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 da, they're going to be as big as Pink Floyd, and I'm like, Nathan, I want to do this, but you've got to do demos. We got to figure out what we're going to do, because if we don't, it's going to turn into a mess. Mm. So, we left it. We moved on all in our lives. I went on and produced stuff. And then, I don't know how it came about, but I'm a fan. Of course, I wanted to work with the Mondays again. So, I think it was for a movie. I think it was for a Christmas album.
Oh, The Ghosts of Oxford Street.
That's when it came around. We, during that session, we did a couple of tracks.
Right.
And it was a cover
What was it?
We couldn't remember at the time, but the track was actually Staying Alive, which was originally, of course, done by the Bee Gees.
No, I don't even know if it came out, but we did it, and it wasn't... The whole thing had changed.
Then when the band had reformed in 1999, Paul went into the studio with the boys to record The Boys Are Back in Town.
There wasn't the same feeling in the studio. Well, I told you what happened upstairs.
Do you want to tell me again?
Do we want to mention it?
Yeah, I think we actually talked about that.
So, I was in the Real World studio, Peter Gabriel's studio. So excited to go down there. It's a residential studio. And we were recording, and then Steve came to me and said that a bunch of his belongings have gone missing. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I checked the whole room, stuff has been stolen. Wallet, money, and the band were there, the band's entourage were there. And then I pulled Sean to the side and I was like, listen, we got a problem here. Unless this wallet and money is put back within the next hour, we're walking and I'm never going to work with you guys again. You don't fucking do that. That is disrespectful, rude, and who fucking steals anyway? I mean, you know, I mean, where's your head at? And let alone the producers who...
making the album, yeah.
Really? Is that where we're at now? Have we got this low that we're doing this? So I'm like, I'm out of here, man. I said, Steve, we're going.
It got resolved. Yeah. It got resolved. It was put back where what was stolen was put back, and it certainly wasn't the band. It was, you know, and I'm sure it was embarrassing for them as much as it was for us. And it just left a bad taste. Yeah. And that killed the vibe. It killed it. There and then, what we had... in that room, in that moment, where we were like, we're going to make a fucking great track. It's Thin Lizzy. It's a cool record. We can just ramp it up. We can give it everything, mate. He said, killed it. Yeah. It was over there. Even when we were trying to do it, it was like, oh, fuck it, man. Mm. You know, I don't want to be here. I don't want to sit around and be around these guys. Because the entourage was still there.
Right, they got rid of the guy that did it, I think. They kicked him out.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And so they should have.
Mm, absolutely, yeah.
Right?
You should never have been there in the first place. No, he was a heroin addict.
Yeah. And that's what you was dealing. You just said it. You're dealing with heroin addicts who just steal, right? Because of what the money for the drugs. Yeah. And unfortunately... he should never have been there, and it should have just been us
and the band.
And the band. Yeah. And that's what it was in LA. And that's now, if we'd recorded that album, Pills, Thrills in England, I don't know if it would have been as good, because it would have been too many people in there mucking it all up. There was, they couldn't go anywhere or call anyone or see anyone, because there was no one here for them to do that with.
Right.
That's what gets you into that work ethic moment where you're just locked in music. You can express yourself in this moment. But when you've got all these people coming in, it's hard to capture that moment. And the Mondays need that.
Yeah. Would you ever...
otherwise, they're all over the shop.
Would you ever work with them again?
Would I ever work with Happy Mondays again? Yes, I would. I don't know if I'm the right person now. You know, would I work with them again? Of course I would. Of course I'd. But it'd have to be, what are we doing? What are we trying to achieve? Where are we going? There's questions. See, we created a sound and a movement. Mm-hmm. Now, what are we going to do? Yeah. What, you know, that would be my question. So you want me to... produce another album. What's your direction? What's your sound? Where do you want to go? You ain't done a record for 30 years. Where are we going with this? Do you want to pick up from where you was and be an indie dance, but make it more edgy and cooler and more dangerous? And, you know, are you ready for that? You know, we're all older now.
What would you advise them to do?
I haven't thought about it. I mean, I don't know. I haven't... maybe I should go away. My head's on... It's the 30-year anniversary of my record label. I'm doing creative collaborations with some older artists and some new young artists. So I'm in a different place in music. To go back and spend several weeks longer with a band, we've got to do demos, you know, what's the lyrical direction? There's a lot of questions before you even get in the studio. You know, and who's to say I'm not the right guy? Maybe I'm not. Maybe they need a producer, of a 25-year-old producer who's got new creative young ideas, you know?
Do you still play the records?
I'm laughing because I found my vinyl copy amongst all these fucking records. When I moved from England, all these records were in some kind of order, and we took them off the shelves, we boxed them all up, we knew where they needed to go, and at that time my assistant was working with me on doing all this. He was writing it all down, and we lost the piece of paper where everything was written down. So I don't really know where anything is, right? To be honest with you.
And you've been here like 12 years in this.
I ain't going to sit here and go through fucking, you know, A, B, year, month, you know, whatever, artist. But what happens is, I do come down here and I pull records. And I found an album copy, vinyl, of Pills and Frills. And I did listen to it several months ago prior to that, COVID.
Right.
And I sat there, and for the first time in 20 odd years, I really listened to the record, and yeah, I'm proud of that record.
Yeah,
it's a real moment. I've got a Q Award for it up there. It was a great moment in my career, in Steve's career, in the Mondays' career. It's a good solid record that you can play today, and sonically the sounds are still there. I mean, you're always going to, as a producer, go back and say, oh, I could have maybe done that. But it was a moment in time that, for me, it was a proud moment.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
We played it in the car on the way here.
Did you?
Yeah, singing along.
Did you really?
We did. How do you think your career, or do you think your career would have taken any different of a trajectory if you hadn't interacted with them? And do you think theirs would have been different? I mean, obviously theirs would have. But
theirs would have been different. I hope. Look, they played an important part in my career, of course, and I'm very grateful. I don't know the answer to your question because I was working with U2. I went on, I did several remixes for them. I went on a world tour with them. I've produced and mixed and toured with Madonna. I've done the coolest bands from Massive Attack to Cure. So I don't know. I don't know if it would have affected my career because I was already doing all this. But I'm certainly happy that they're part of my life and I will always look back on the Happy Mondays with fond memories, you know, and I love those guys. I mean, they're who don't? Yeah. I mean, from what I'm aware of, you know, which my mum's told me, my friends have told me, you know, Bez and Sean are, you know, are all over TV.
They are.
they're lovable characters. Mm-hmm. They're part of British culture in some respects. I mean, they're the Happy Mondays. I mean, you don't see it with Stone Roses, you don't see it with the Spiral Carpets, you don't see it with the Smiths, you don't see it with New Order. I mean, the Mondays are a special band. Mm. You don't see, name another band where you see two of the front men 30 years later sitting on TV doing cooking with this or that or Google Box. I mean, I don't get it all here. We don't get it here, you know, but I'm told and I follow. YouTube, I follow them. On social. So,
Do you remember where you were when you found out Paul had died and what you thought?
Yeah, it was a sad moment. I was here, just at home.
What did you think?
Just sad, you know. As I said, Paul was a stand-up, solid guy.
Yeah.
You know, and he was, remember at his wedding when we was there, it was a good vibe, you know, it was good moments. Just sad.
Yeah. Kind of a leveller, isn't it, when our generation, you know, start to go. Lots of musicians around that age.
Yeah. As we get older, obviously death comes closer. And life's, that old cliche that's true, that it's too short, where has it gone? Yeah. I mean, what year did we do Pills and Thrills?
90, I think.
Yeah. 1990. Where's it gone? I don't know why they didn't do, you know, it's none of my business. I don't know why they didn't do another record, because there's certainly talent there.
Mm-hmm. Paul's written loads of bass lines, apparently, that he's left behind. So, like, you can use those bass lines in your new album. It's funny, though, that he's now talking about them. It was Gary that told me that. We'll see. We don't know. Who knows?
Tell Gary he's supporting the wrong team.
I will.
He's telling them one fuck all for 20 years, man. You're supporting the wrong team, Gary. Come and join Chelsea. Me and him always will always like this on football.
I love Gaz. Gaz is one of my favourite people in the world.
And Gary's got his own group, I saw.
Yes.
He goes and does
the family tree.
He does his own things, right?
Yeah, and he sings and plays acoustic guitar as well.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, lives in Canada.
What happened to PD?
PD, I saw him at the funeral. He's living in Manchester. He rejoined the band when they reformed, but only lasted a few gigs.
Because Sean went and done Black Grape.
Yeah.
I followed them from afar.
Yeah.
And it was a real, real shame. I don't know if you know this. It's a real fucking shame. So I got, several months ago, I got a call, an email, from an agent in the United States that was representing the Happy Mondays and was bringing them to America.
Yeah.
Would I like to open for them? Of course, I will. So I said to McGee, yeah, of course. The concert's meant to be next month in LA.
Yeah.
And it got pulled.
Do you know why it got pulled?
I was told Sean didn't want to come to America.
Really?
Yeah. That's what I was told. That Sean's not feeling America. I think that was one reason. I'd love to see them perform.
Yeah.
That I would, because they do that album, and I haven't seen that album ever played live.
Nah. Really?
Nah.
Ah, that's true.
I mean, when I have, because I've done shows with them.
Yeah.
But they were 25 years ago.
Okay. The shows got better and the live shows got better and better. They were really, really good live. Like they still had it, and they worked really hard on the live shows.
Yeah, no, I would love to see. I'd love to see them do that album live.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a Pills Feels tour.
There was.
There was.
Yeah, the end of last year. I think the end of last year was the 30th anniversary.
Right, fucking 30 years.
You might get the chance. You never know. But yeah.
Oh, I hope I will. It's not for trying. It's just when I go home, they're not playing,
right.
And when I'm here, they're playing.
Yeah.
You know. So, and with my touring and festivals, and right. It just doesn't fall.
Yeah.
You know. So I was so excited when they said, "Okay, well, you're going to open for New York and LA,
oh.
And then we're going to do the Palladium here."
Paul was really excited about doing the gig in LA. You know, finally gets to play where he lives.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And then, yeah.
But not to worry. Anyway. All right, I'm going to jump.
Thank you so much.
Thanks
really,
so much.
Really appreciate
You're welcome.
It. That was really, nice. Really good. That's all we've got for you this week. He's brilliant, isn't he? Love him. We're playing out with a song that Rowetta and Pete Smith did with Paul called Party People, which I think was made for the 24-hour Party People film and used on their website. You also might recognise some of the bits of instrumentals from this show in there. Anyway, go and visit our website, paulryder.tv, for all of the information that you need if you're interested in following up on anything to do with the show. Thank you so much for being here. Lots and lots of love to you all. Have a fantastic week. And we'll be back again next week, same time, same place. Lots and lots of love to you all. Massive thanks to Paul Oakenfold, and of course to the big man himself, the late great Paul Anthony Ryder.
Just can't see. I'm living out some other body's lies. What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? Party people, party town. Everybody's gotta get up. Get down. Party people, party sound. Everybody's gotta get up to get down. I'm trapped in the middle of some other body's dream, and I can't get out. Don't know how to get out. And a single whisper sounds just like a scream.
Listening Productions.